through a mitzvah, the Jew lives the truth that Hashem is one. Through an aveira, through a sin, the Jew lives the lie that there's something outside of Hashem in the deepest way. And just as in 23, the Alter Rebbe addressed two elements: the energy of the deed of the mitzvah and the human being engaged in the mitzvah, all who get in touch with Hashem's unity in the different ways, like he explained at length in 23. So now in 24, he also discusses in the realm of sin both elements: the deed per se, the sinful deed, and the human being engaged in the transgression. So he begins now with the sinful deed per se. That these deeds, these shasa mitzvahs, the 365 prohibitions, whatever constitutes a prohibition, they represent something that's opposed to Hashem's unity. And living with them, falling prey to them, engaging in them, is succumbing and living and perpetuating the lie that I am unholy, I am ungodly, I'm detached from Hashem. They tell the story that the holy Reb Nachum of Chernobyl would strongly encourage the Jewish custom of conducting a Suda, a feast, a celebration, whenever he heard of any type of Jew involved in anything that warrants such a type of feast, whether it was a bar mitzvah, a circumcision, a wedding, a siyum. When you finish studying a tractate in Talmud, it's customary to make a feast. Reb Nachum of Chernobyl would always encourage Jews to make so many more feasts and meals to celebrate any type of holy good deed that they did. And when such an event would take place, he would hasten to participate, and he would urge that the meal should be lavish and should be exciting, and many people should come, and so forth. Not only that, but sometimes he would pay for himself. If there was no other, if that was a necessity, he would himself pay for the expenses of the Suda's mitzvah, if it was a needy family and so forth, to ensure that the feast was prepared in the most powerful way, in the most lavish way. Once Reb Nachum explained his particular affinity for these types of mitzvah celebrations. And this is what he said. He said, one year, the fate of the Jewish people was to be decided in the heavenly court on Rosh Hashanah. So the prosecuting angel comes with a huge load of sins. He places it at one side, at the left side of the great cosmic balance scale. And then the advocate of the Jewish people, known as Malach Michal, Michal the angel, who's the supernal advocate of Israel, he brings a load of mitzvahs. And he puts it on the other side of the scale. But unfortunately, the mitzvahs fail to tip the scale to the side of merit. So at this point, Michal stands up before the court, and this is what he says. He says, it's true that there are more sins than mitzvahs, but the balance between them is not being weighed properly. Because when a Jew does a mitzvah, he does it with a joyous heart. He's happy. He's fulfilled. He's serene when he does a mitzvah. He's elated by the opportunity to get in touch with, to serve his Creator, to get connected with Hashem, to get in touch with his soul. On the other hand, when a Jew performs a transgression, when a Jew violates a mitzvah, when a Jew engages in a sin, that occurs at a moment of weakness, at a moment of instinct, at a moment of passion. It's not done with previous meditation and inner joy and fervor. They're done without real enthusiasm. Right when a Jew does a sin, his heart is already heavy with regret. 10 minutes later, he's totally miserable about what he did. So he says each mitzvah should by right outweigh many transgressions in the ultimate calculations. The prosecuting angel speaks up and he says, can you prove to us that this is the case? Michal, prove it. And he says, yeah, I'll prove it, certainly. Observe, what happens when a Jew does a mitzvah? What does a Jew do after he does a big mitzvah? He prepares a lavish feast. He invites his friends, he buys food, he buys drinks, and he invites his family, friends, relatives, to come share in his joy for the fact that he merited to fulfill a divine commandment. Now tell me, have you ever seen a Jew come into shul and walk over to his friend and say, I'm throwing a major party tomorrow? Why? Why are you throwing a party? Because I performed an extraordinary sin. You never saw that happen. Why doesn't a Jew throw a party when he sins? He never saw a Jew walk into shul and go over to his friend and say, you heard what happened to me yesterday? So exciting. I spoke gossip for 2 hours. You never saw a Jew come to his wife and say, I had an extraordinary day. I sinned in this sin and I sinned in this sin. There's nothing to celebrate. The moment he does it, there's already a part in him that regrets it. And he has to cover up. And certainly after he does it. And the reason for that is because a sin is really a statement, a proclamation against our own truth, our own reality. So you don't celebrate it. It's just, we have weak elements, we have negative inclinations, we have powerful instincts and cravings and urges. So it's never a premeditated act. We fall succumb to the mask. We put on a mask, we cover up who we really are, and we sin. So there's nothing to celebrate. Because a sin is a proclamation against the very chemistry of reality, against the very chemistry of our identity, against the very chemistry of the self.
One moment. K'moy ha-sitra acher, va-klipa ha-nikras ha-vedezara ve-lekim acher. They are the same as the sitra acher and the other klipa, and the klipa, which are called idolatry and other gods. Since the internal aspect of the divine will is concealed from them, as explained above in Perikov Beis. The Alter Rebbe asked a major question in Perikov Beis. If, in essence, the entire world and everything contained in it is nothing but an embodiment of Hashem's speech, of Hashem's creative energy, and the state of independence is a total illusion because the world has no reality but the divine energy, how is it that our world is characterized and perceived as a place where we can even deny the reality of Hashem, where there's a concept of Avodah Zarah and Elokim Acher? And this is a klipa which Hashem created. It doesn't only begin in the human realm. Hashem created spiritual energies which are called Avodah Zarah, which are called Elokim Acherim. So the Alter Rebbe explained that they are called Elokim Acherim from a Hasidic perspective because Elokim Acherim doesn't only mean other gods. It means that they also come from God. From what aspect of Elokim? From the Acherim of Elokim, from his hind part. Which means they, like everything else, are sustained at every moment from Hashem's creative energy. But they are sustained from what element of his energy, so to speak, from his hind part, which is the metaphor of which conveys the message that it's not a communication which is communicated from Hashem's internal aspect, symbolizing a communication which is done with fervor, with zealousness, with inner volition, which is fueled by his real will and convictions and intimate desires, but rather it's, so to speak, a means for an end, where the means is totally not the ultimate purpose, and is created only as a necessity to achieve a goal which is not achieved through this very dynamic. And this is called achirayim. It's like when you, as he gave the metaphor, when you are forced to give something to someone you really despise for whatever reason. You don't want to look the person in the face. You throw it over your shoulder to the person. That's called a communication, mebchinas achirayim. But that's not enough. That energy itself has to now be contracted and obscured and constricted and limited, and it has to descend a very complex and nuanced evolutionary chain where it descends from one gradation to another gradation to another gradation until it is concealed to the extent which where it can create and give vitality to a reality which does not recognize Hashem's unity. And that reality, which is being sustained by that energy at that moment, can deny the very energy that is sustaining the moment of denial. So the absence, the concealment of the Ratzin Elyon of the divine will and energy it should be, is so powerful in these cases, beginning from the Achirayim element of it, that it gives room to create something where that energy should be concealed and they should perceive themselves as autonomous, egotistical, independent realities. So now the Alter Rebbe says, every Aveda, not Aveda Zayin, the energy of the performance of any aspect, any thought, utterance or deed, which violates Hashem's will, the energy of that is similar exactly to the clip of Avodah Zarah. Because this is an act which acknowledges Hashem's unity, on the contrary, it suppresses, it buries Hashem's unity. It is perpetuating the illusion and the delusion that there is something significant and existing outside of the realm of Hashem's will. And this is concerning the energy of the Aveira itself. And now the Alter Rebbe continues concerning the human being who is involved in that act or word or thought. Just as the forbidden actions themselves represent total separation from godliness, so too, the three garments of a Jew's animal soul, which stem from the klipa of Neigah, discussed in earlier chapters at length, Shehem, Machshav, Diburu, Maisa, Hamalu, Bashem, Beshasan, Laisa, Seder, Yaisu, Derabana. Namely, the thought, speech, and action that are clothed in the 365 Teda prohibitions or of any of the rabbinic injunctions. When a human being is doing Chas V'Shalom and Aveira, whether any type of Aveira, one of the three garments of his animal soul is being projected and expressed. The souls have three garments: thought, speech, and action. The power of thinking, the power of talking, the power of doing. These three garments are three spiritual powers which can be filled either with a content which serves the ambitions of the divine soul, or with a content that serves the ambitions of the animal soul. These three garments, when one, for example, is doing an Aveira, so what happens? The garment of action, his power of action, is now enclosed, finds expression and is being expressed through a certain Aveira, a mitzvah slayser sederai sederabon, or the faculty of speech, or the faculty of thought, or all three of them. So what occurs to these garments? And Alter Rebbe continues, V'chein mohus ha-nefesh atzma amalu bashes b'luvusha. Similarly, the essence of the soul itself, which is clothed in these garments. Besides the garments dress a soul. And when someone does an Aveira, thinks something which is an Aveira talk, there is a soul that is imbued in these garments. So the soul and the garment which is involved in this Aveira. Kula miyuchadim mamash. V'sitra achiro klipazu aniknas avedazara. All of them become completely united with this sitra achira and klipa called avedazara, idolatry. Just as the energy of the Aveira symbolizes that klipa, the human energy that is involved in that Aveira, both the garments and the soul itself, all become, God forbid, connected and unified with this dynamic of Aveda Zara, with this energy, with this type of perception and reality. Concerning mitzvahs, the Alter Rebbe also made the distinction, or actually discuss the two elements of the mitzvah itself and the human being involved in the mitzvah, saying that the mitzvah itself, that relationship to Ratzon Elyon, is like the relationship of a body to a soul. The energy of the performance of a mitzvah, its relationship to the inner unity and will of Hashem, is like an organ to a soul. The organ of the body is totally connected with the soul. It has no personality of its own, save it serving as a conduit for the expression of the soul. The human garments involved in the mitzvah, the energy of action, the energy of speech, the energy of thought, certainly the soul itself involved in the mitzvah, also assume the identity of a body versus a soul in their relationship to their rationality. The human physical instruments involved in the mitzvah, he said, assume the identity of a chariot to the Ratzon Elyon. concerning the Aveira, now the Alter Rebbe says, the Aveira itself is representative of those elements that are separated in their perception from Hashem's unity in the utmost powerful way. The human energy now involved in the Aveira and the soul itself and the garments are all now united and connected with this klipa. V'lo yoyed, and furthermore, not only are they united with the klipa and equal to it, but furthermore, they become secondary and subordinate to it, and much lower and more debased than it. Why? For the clip is at least not clothed in a corporal body. And therefore, it is much more exposed to the divine light, as we shall see. Therefore, V'yedas, as Rebbeinit, knows its master, V'eina meyedes boy, lifel po'lasa b'mishlachas malachi roim shalom, shaloi b'shlichusir shalmakim baruch uchas b'shalom. Therefore, it does not rebel against him, God forbid, by any independent act of sending its evil messengers, other than in the service of Hashem. U'kemaymer Bilam, as Bilam said, in Parshas Balak, le'uchal laveris pi Hashem v'gemer. I cannot violate the word of Hashem. And Alter Rebbe clarifies, v'av shenikra aveda zara, although these klippas are called aveda zara, idolatry. So what do we mean when we say that they do not rebel against Hashem? Hakaru le'elekad alakaya. Yet they refer to him. Our sages refer to this klippa, to the dynamic of aveda zara, which is adhered to by many of the nations of the universe, at the conclusion of Masechta Menachos, that they define Hashem as Alekad Alekaya, the God of gods, meaning that there are many other gods also, but they do not deny Him completely. They say that He is the God of other gods. But Ve'einam Yechelim Lavir Klal Aretzein Yisbarach. They cannot violate Hashem's will. They can violate His unity, not His mastery. Ki yoidim umasig, for they know and they perceive, shehu chiyusam v'kiyumam, that He is their life and their sustenance. She yoin ki mipchines achirayim d'achirayim, shel ratzin baruch hu hamakif aleim, since they derive their nurture from the hindermost aspect of the divine will, which encompasses them, which surrounds them, ela sheyinikasam v'chayusam, it's only that the sustenance and life force, Hibibchinis Galus Besaicham, is within them, in a state of exile, Lahakshiv Atzman Alakus, so that they regard themselves as gods, Vahadezukfirabachdusa, which is in essence a denial of Hashem's unity. Avol Mikoma came, but nevertheless, Einon Kaifer. They are not so completely heretical as to deny Hashem and to assert that He does not exist. It's just that they refine Him, they define Him, they regard Him as the God of gods, which means the Hainu. That means Chayusam v'kiyumam hanimshach v'yered aleim eretzein yisbarach. Recognizing that their life and existence ultimately derives from His will. He is the God of the gods. V'lachein, therefore, einan ivrin nitzayni yizbarach la'olam. They never rebel against Hashem's will. V'im kein, therefore, it follows that ha'adam ha'ivrin al nitzayni yizbarach, the human being who does violate Hashem's will, who garu al pachis harbi me'ait, is greatly inferior to, and more debased than, than the klip and sitra achra, which are called aveda zara and other gods, v'hu, and this human being, is betachlis hapirut, is separated completely from Hashem's unity and oneness, even more than they are, ukiilu kaifer ba'achdusay yaisem imenachas v'shalom, as though denying his unity, even more radically than they, than those spiritual clippers called Avodah Zarah, God forbid. This is similar to the idea written in Eitz Chaim, Portal 42, the conclusion of Chapter 4. Shaharasha ba'olam hazah hachumri, hushimrei haklipois, hushmarei haklipois hagaseschum. That the evil in this corporal world is the dregs of the coarse klippos, v'utachlis habirichuli, it is the sediment of the purifying process, and so forth. V'lachem, therefore, the Eitz Chaim concludes, kol ma'isay l'mhazah, kashim v'rayim, for this reason, all matters of this world are harsh and evil, and the wicked prevail in it, and so forth. Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point to make. The Alter Rebbe emphasizes v'chein l'gimel levush ha'nefesh shemeklipas neiga shabiyisrael v'chein mehus ha'nefesh atzma. What's going on to the divine soul at the moment of an aveda? That Alter Rebbe will address at the conclusion of the chapter, when he discusses that element of man which is totally separated from Hashem's unity. He's discussing the animal soul that falls prey to the glittering veneer that Avedas represent. Indeed, that is 100% true. What did Alter Rebbe say here? He distinguished and said that the separateness that the man falls prey to at the moment he or she is engaged in the act, word, or thought that embodies an Avera, something that Hashem deems as being contrary to His will and to His wisdom, to His perspective, to His vision. That is what an Avera is. Any type of Avera. The 365 Averas in the Torah, the rabbinic injunctions, which are based on the Torah, and so on. That act or word or thought, man who is involved in it, together with the act, are then characterized by separateness, by an unhealthy, egotistical independence that is contrary to the energy and the essence of creation, which is defined by Hashem's unity. Similar to the spiritual energy of Klippos and Avodah Zarah, but even more. Why? So the Alter Rebbe said as follows. They, the spiritual energies of Avodah Zarah, in most cases, the Gemara says, define themselves as Elokad Elokaya, God of gods, which means they recognize that Hashem is their God. Because they recognize that all their power, all their sustenance comes from Hashem. It's just, since the energy comes from Hashem's hind part, and it is so obscured and so concealed that it becomes exiled within them, therefore it allows room that they should also consider themselves gods. Their ego should also be a powerful ego. There is not one eye in the world, there are two eyes. But my eye also comes from that eye, but I also have an eye. Which means, if they would be in touch with what's going on, if their ears would be listening to the melody of the universes, then ego bechlal has no place from the Alter Rebbe's perspective. The whole concept of ego is one powerful dream, fantasy, illusion, and delusion. We discussed previous weeks the Alter Rebbe's perspective on ego in the conclusion of chapter 22. The problem of ego is not just a social problem. The problem of ego is that it's the ultimate enemy of life, because when you're holding on to an ego, you're holding on to something that simply doesn't exist. It was contrived by a mind that is, or a heart that's not in touch with the energy of the universe. Why doesn't an ego exist? Because Hashem Echad, Hashem is one. The world is created something from nothing, and the something has no reality independent of the Creator, and His energy is always bringing it into being. So the only identity of every single thing is the divine element of it. And that allows for identity, because the divine energy grants identity to every single thing, a specific identity, but it's a divine identity. Furthermore, if one gets in touch with even a deeper level of the melody, he not only recognizes that the world has no ego of its own, But he gets in touch with a level where the world has no significance, even as an expression of the divine energy. Where kula kamei kalei chashev. These energies called avedah zara, klipa, lekim acherim, and so forth. The divine energy is so suppressed that it leaves room that they should consider themselves an I. I am a metzius. The I is significant. I am a God. But nevertheless, since it's ultimately spiritual energies, totally foolish and ridiculous they're not, they ultimately recognize that there is a God of gods and they come from His will. It's not a will that excludes their ego, but it's a will that leaves, it's so suppressed that it leaves room to their ego, and therefore they can never violate His will. If He wants something, He's ultimately the boss. So Bilam tells Balak, when he requests for him to come curse the Jewish people, that if Balak is going to give me a home full of silver and gold, I cannot violate Hashem's will. Bilam symbolizes the spiritual archenemy of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara says that the counterpart of Moshe Rabbeinu by the non-Jews was Bilam. Bilam was a very profound mystic. An extremely profound mystic, Bilam was. Nevertheless, he utilized his elements to serve Klippa. He was the embodiment of Klippa. We're now talking about the spiritual energy that Bilam represented. Even that, Bilam says, Le'ulcha lavaris pi Hashem. So there's a kfira ba'achdusai. That's true. They deny Hashem's unity because Hashem's unity excludes one considering himself a god. In the literal sense, in the conceptual sense, in a smaller sense, and so forth. But nevertheless, they don't deny His reality, and they do not certainly transgress His will. Now we have the human being. The human being who's involved in an aveda is not just recognizing himself as a reality, as a significant reality. He goes much more than that. He says that the ultimate decider in what to do and what not to do is the ego. He's over on Hashem's ratzon. He doesn't only recognize Hashem's unity in the extent where it excludes an ego. He doesn't even recognize Hashem's unity in the sense that He's the boss, that He's the master. He transfers the power of authority from Hashem to Himself. So over here it's even a lower level of separateness. A lower level than the klipa and the avodah zarah itself. This is hepach haratzon. Not just natiratzon, it's not just egotistical. He is involved in an element which is saying Hashem wants this, and despite, notwithstanding the fact that Hashem wants this, since at this moment I am tempted to do so and so, so I go in and engage in this. So what Alter Rebbe is saying here is the tragedy of the moment is, it's not just he's detaching himself from the rhythm of life as much as the klippas of the zon are detaching themselves, but he's attaching himself in such a powerful way where he can be engaged in something that is contrary to the very will, which is the essence of himself at that moment and the essence of everything else. And this is the concept that's spoken in Eitz Chaim about the dynamic of this world.
Yeah.
The evolutionary process of the worlds, there are the shmarim. There is the divine energy, and as a result of various phenomena, there are also the shmarim. So the Eitz Chaim says, the purest energy is in Atzilus. And then, there are subtle elements which are not as pure. That's the energy that's in the next world in Bria. And then there are even a little more coarse levels of the energy that's in Yetzirah. And then the Shmarei HaKlippas Agassas, the dregs of the coarse Klippas, that ends up in Olam HaSiyah, in this world. And therefore the Arizal says, in this world there are dynamics that don't exist in any other worlds. The activities of this world can be so harsh and evil, and the wicked can prevail in such a powerful way that doesn't exist in the other worlds. Even though in higher worlds there are also elements of Klippas. But the idea is that it's in this world that the concealment is so powerful that the human being can come and not only not recognize Hashem's unity as the Klippas don't recognize it, but could rather violate His very will, which is even a more extreme and a lower level. Exactly. The reason why he's worse than Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah are spiritual energies that Hashem creates. Yeah. So they might be uncomfortable and harsh and negative and so forth. But Le'ucha Lavaris be Hashem. Hashem created them. And if we created them, Taki, had to obscure his energy in a very powerful way. And to the extent that the energy finds itself exiled within them, because if it wouldn't be exiled, it wouldn't leave room for the presence of Avodah Zarah. But nevertheless, it's not so concealed that they could come to Hashem and say, Du willst das sei und nicht sag verkehrt. You want this, but I say exact opposite. What does the human being who's doing an Avera say? They say what? Du sagst das sei und nicht sag ich. That's what they say. You say, and I also say. That's fine. You have an opinion, and I also have an opinion. Mela. What does the Aveda say? What does the human being does? Not you have an opinion, and I also have an opinion. You have an opinion. But I'm telling you that my life is an exercise in an opinion which is contrary to you. The Rebbe says, this is already a chiddush. That's daf mekanan. This you have to be able to. This is already not the normal process. Over here, the separation is a much deeper. It's a much deeper separation. So have a wonderful week on Afreilich and Purim.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or albums, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.